Welcome to the Product Design Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Coolin, founder of UX Cabin, where we create world-class web and mobile apps. I'm excited to bring you a behind-the-scenes look into the lives of some of the most interesting and talented people in product design. We'll get strategic advice on how they got to where they are today and things they wish they would have known earlier in their career. Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for checking out the Product Design Podcast. Today, we have Jesse Showalter, a freelance UI UX designer and online educator. Many of you probably know Jesse as he's really, really popular on YouTube and across some other socials. So awesome that you have agreed to come on, Jesse. I'm super pumped to have you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Seth. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Very cool. So, Jesse, for those of our listeners who don't know about you, could you give a little intro as to who you are and what you do?
Sure. Yeah. My name is Jesse Showalter. I'm located in the Austin, Texas area. I am a UI designer, UX designer, product designer, whatever you want to call it. I love making apps, websites, and software. That's kind of like my gig. That's my deal. I've been doing that for about 13 or 14 years on and off in the industry. I started in like a traditional kind of like print design kind of like arena or realm, fell in love with web design, started coding my own websites back in like the late 90s in Dreamweaver using tables. They were atrocious and awful. And then retaught myself, you know, basically front-end development, HTML, CSS, JavaScript. So I fell in love with the web. I fell in love with the iterative nature of application software and websites. And I've worked for marketing agencies. I've worked for startups, in-house, you know, kind of gigs. And I've freelanced for a number of years, which is what I'm doing right now and absolutely loving it while I make content for people.
That is awesome. So we kind of know a little bit what you do for work and for, you know, your job type of thing. What are some of the things that you do outside of work that kind of helps recharge you and get the creative juices flowing outside?
Yeah, I have a wife and two kids. My wife and I have been married for 12 years. My kids are 9 and 10. We're heavily involved in our church. That's a huge portion, like a thing about my life that like recharges me. I am a 37-year-old white belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I have a huge passion for like mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu. So I get my butt kicked at least like four times a week, constantly choked out, tapped out, and slammed. Don't know why I do it to myself. Just love it. Besides that, I love to hike and bike and get outdoors. And I'm a big runner, like avid runner. Done some marathons and triathlons and stuff like that. So I just like being active. And a lot of times, actually, it ends up being things that are individual challenges, like not team sports, but individual sports, not team activities, but, you know, like hiking, biking, running, jiu-jitsu. These are all tend to be things that where I challenge myself. I like that a lot.
Very cool. Very cool. So I'm sure we'll get into some of both life and work, but really interested to see, you know, what was kind of the initial moment that kind of got you into web stuff that said, yeah, like caught your attention? It was like, man, I want to do this.
Yeah. Like I said, I had no background or training originally in design of any sort. I was the little kid growing up who would get like a remote control car for Christmas and then immediately take it apart and piss my mom and dad off because I destroyed this present they got me. But I didn't know anything about art or creativity. I liked how things worked. That was like something that was really interesting to me. And I didn't really have a career path. I was in the military for 4 years. I got out. I was playing in bands and like touring and playing music. And then my girlfriend, then wife now of 12 years, while we were dating, encouraged me to use creativity to kind of build a career, something that I could show up every day and do that I love to do. So wow. I tried a bunch of different things. I tried painting, horrible at it, sculpting, awful. Everything just ended up looking like a big lump of clay. But then I loved computers and technology as well. So I got a hold of like, I'm sorry to say it, like a Filipino, like bootleg cracked version of like Photoshop 7. And I started making like really rugged, like band flyers that had like way too much grunge texture and drop shadow. They were all awful. But I loved this idea of like technology and problem solving creativity, like coming together. Where that really took the next step was I did like an internship at my church. And I got my first job doing like print design at like a tour company in Hawaii. And then at that tour company, I was hired to like make brochures and rack cards and business cards and all that kind of stuff. And they said, oh no, we need somebody to like make a website. Do you know how to do that? And in standard kind of Jesse fashion, I was like, of course I do. Obviously I know how to do that, which I obviously did not know how to do that. And I just started figuring it out. But what I love, it was like, it clicked for me was if something was wrong, I could go back and fix it. If there was a typo, a misprint, something was up, it wasn't like, you've ruined the world, Jesse. It was like, right. You got another shot. It's iterative, dude. Go back out there and change the HTML. So I fell in love with that. And that paired with all of a sudden design had not only something to do with creativity, right? And color, typography, all that kind of stuff. But now it also had to do with what's going on underneath the hood of that remote control car. How does it work? And I was like, oh, this is it. Like I get to make something that looks good and then it has to work good as well. It was the bringing together of those two things for me. And that's when I was like, I got to learn front end development. So I dove in and really like grounded out and learned like HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And that just like made me fall in love with it more. And then it turned to like applications and software. So, but that was the moment when it was like, it's both and.
Yes. That's the one thing that I love about the web is kind of what you mentioned is like, you can always go back and fix it. And the other cool thing, like when I was in college, I got a marketing degree, but I took a web class. And one thing that kind of clicked with me when I was in that class is when we got to our first exam, sometimes you have an open book exam. That's really helpful because you can look up stuff.
Sure.
Our teacher was like, okay, to make this as real world as possible, not only is this open book, but it's open internet. So you can just like use whatever to figure it out.
Love it.
And I was like, wait a second. I was like, I'm going to ace this. Like, there's nothing I can't figure out just by like, if I'm just smart about what I need to look up.
Right.
And that is really kind of real world because whenever you're having a problem with something in front end development or design, like there's a good chance that someone has had that same problem and they've given a solution to fix it.
Yeah. The internet's changed everything, right? The internet has changed how we do, like use basic functions in our life, how we turn on lights, how we research things, how we learn, how we grow. Like the internet's kind of changed everything. And if we hadn't been taught that lesson yet, COVID really like reinforced it. Like the internet can do so much for you, right? Technology, internet, this coming together of usable things, beautiful things, like things that you can now access from home. It kind of changed life. Just, it's one of the most astronomical technological innovations of all time. Like there was like the horse, the chariot, and then like the internet. Like it's like that was like one of the big ones, right? For us as a people. So being able to create things for that innovation, being able to serve things up to people using that innovation is just, it's fun. It's exciting. And I wake up every day like, cool, what's next? What else could I possibly do? And when everyone thinks they could do no more, you're on the verge of becoming a dinosaur, then all of a sudden the metaverse is launched and 3D is in and
what 3.0
options, right? Like what's an NFT? What is the blockchain? Like how can we use it? How can we leverage it to make things that work? So I just love that idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's cool that it kind of breaks down these barriers of like, you don't have to just be like inherently super smart and self-contained. You just have to be good at asking the right questions to know how to get to the right answers. And you know, you gain that knowledge over time. But like, if you came to me today and you're like, Seth, link a style sheet to this page, I'd be like, I need to Google that real quick. It's like, I know like very advanced CSS principles, but sometimes it's just like things aren't worth retaining in your brain just because, you know, you can find it easily somewhere. It's not, you know, it's kind of like maps, right? Like I don't memorize directions. I just use Google Maps, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to our own like advantage and disadvantage.
For sure.
We've decided as a people to offload certain things. I was at a conference years ago and Daniel Burka, who was at the time, like one of the lead designers at Google, was talking about the evolution of technology and how the whole idea behind technology was to get it closer and closer and closer to the user. You know, like 40 years ago, like there was racks on the wall and those were computers. And then there's the first home computing station. And then Steve Jobs blew everyone's mind and put it like in your hand. And now we're wearing it on our wrist. And you know, right. Elon Musk is making a chip that goes in your brain. The idea is to get it closer, 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 closer to you. And the closer it gets, the more things that we offload. Like I have been married to my wife for 12 years. I don't know her phone number. I don't need to know her. It's sad. a little bit. For I might be able to call. I feel like a child, like I'm three. Like somebody's gonna be like, "Do you know how to call home?" And I'm like, "I don't. I don't know how to call home." You know, because it's like we've offloaded all of these things, but it's kind of a there's a benefit to that as well. Like, you know, you only have so much cognitive energy and capacity
right.
to process things. We're in a faster moving world. We need to offload things into external storage, so to speak. And as product designers, we have the ability to do that. We have the ability to facilitate that process and make it as simple and streamlined as possible.
For sure. For sure. So currently you are kind of creating content, educational content on YouTube. You are freelancing, doing your own thing. Can you tell us a little bit of like what led you to that? Like what kind of places you worked at and how you eventually made the decision of like, I actually just want to work for myself as opposed to working for a company and all the decisions that kind of went through your career path as you went through that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a vibe out there online right now where everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. Everybody thinks freelancing is the cool thing. And that just wasn't the case always like years ago. It used to be like, you're one of those like feast or famine, like poor people who were like yes. just trying to get like a Craigslist gig in a coffee shop. That's you.
Yes.
That used to be like the vibe. And now it's like every other course I see being sold online is a how to freelance course. So, you know, it's risen in popularity, I think similarly because we have the capabilities of working remote, working online, not having to go into an office. Those capabilities have risen as well. But I've worked in all sorts of scenarios. I've worked for Fortune 500 companies, startups, marketing agencies, design agencies. I was like an in-house graphic designer and I was an intern at a church. Like, so I've done pretty much everything in the space as far as like where you could work. Where I started to kind of move towards wanting to full-time freelance like I am right now is I was working for a startup. I ended up going remote about a year and a half into that startup when I moved from Hawaii to Austin. And I was able to accomplish so much more work as a remote worker than the other 11 people that were still there in the office. So all of a sudden, because the time difference was there, I had like 4 hours in the morning to wake up, check my tasks, and then just crank out these creative blocks of time. And I was like, this is fabulous. And then I would check in with my team and I would have accomplished quote unquote like 8 hours of work in like 3.5 or 4 hours. So I was like, this is a game changer. Like I'm a people person. I'm a 7 on the Enneagram. I'm an extrovert. I'm an ENT, whatever. I'm on the Myers-Briggs. Like I'm all about it. Like I talk with my hands and storytell. You could tell. So I love being around people, but I am my own distraction because I love being around people so much. So for me, it was like to get away and be able to focus and stop being my own distraction. That was a big moment for me when I realized what a benefit that is for me, just my style. But the other one was, as I started creating content, as I started, you know, freelancing more and more, and of course, everyone is moonlighting at first and doing things in the background and side projects. When it started to become more real, more full time, I started realizing I love creativity. I love design. I love all that stuff. But what I love more is solving people's problems. And at the end of the day, business tends to solve more people's problems than visual design does.
Sure.
So I'm in love with solving problems. I love people. So I love clients. And I realized I love depending on myself to wake up each and every day and solve my own problems of employment. So whereas you wake up every day when you're employed by somebody else, that problem is on them. That onus is on them of employment. I actually like being my own boss. I like dealing with taxes and structure and, you know, strategies and client documents. I dig those sorts of things. I didn't used to, but over time, somehow I morphed into that. And now I love that more than the other stuff. So now creativity is the vehicle for me to do business.
Sure.
Which is what I love most.
That's awesome. Before I started building a team and an agency, I was a freelancer myself for a few years. And, you know, I think a lot of people think about freelancing in the way of like, oh, don't want to freelance because there's all of these unknowns and bridges like I don't want to cross, whether it's like how to find healthcare or how to find clients or steady work or the, you know, taxes, whatever the thing might be. And I think kind of going back to our discussion on like finding or looking up the answers, it's like, okay, people have done this before. people have been successful at it before. Why can't I? And this kind of goes to your personality, what you value, whether it's security or risk or whatever. But for me, I really kind of liked what you were saying, kind of having that like fire under yourself of like, I need to fix my own employment problem. And for me, I needed that pressure to be able to do my best work.
Yeah. I feel like also for me, again, like the solo kind of like sport thing, like the challenge myself, like me versus somebody else, they choke me out. We shake hands. Hey, that was great. How did you do that? I love to learn and grow as a person. I'm very, very much like addicted to that process. And being a solopreneur, being an entrepreneur or a business person forces you, like you said, to do that. There's a metric involved there, right? So again, instead of putting the metric in a manager's hand or supervisor or an owner's hand and saying, how am I doing? You tell me. I have to wake up every day and look at my checking account and go, I'm not doing good today, or I'm doing great today, right? Sure. I didn't do good this quarter. I could have done better. How do I get better next quarter? So that becomes an individual race for yourself. And I feel like the growth personally is exponential when you cease to depend on other people for evaluation and assessment, and you start to have to become more talented at self-assessment. What's wrong? What am I doing wrong? What's wrong with my marketing? What's wrong with the way that I'm presenting myself online? When you have to address those, because like necessity is the mother of all invention, they say, right?
Sure.
When I need to pay my mortgage and feed my family, oh, I'm gonna figure that crap out. Right. But if somebody else is paying my mortgage and somebody else is dealing with those things, I don't have to figure those things out. And there's less challenge there and less sharpening and honing that takes place. I feel like not everyone wants that. And I don't look down on people if they're like, I would much rather just do that. I'm like, awesome. Cause at the end of the day, I want people to live the life that brings them joy and they find purpose and satisfaction in. So if you love that, go do that. Like, I did it for years and I love it. And I'm not opposed to doing it again. I just love what I'm doing right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's great. One thing you mentioned there is, you know, kind of self-assessment and getting better at that over time. Thinking about all of the different avenues that you've been through, what are some of the highs and lows of your career that you look back and you can kind of give a self-assessment as to really good times in your career and really low points in your career?
Yeah. I think really good times in my career have been when there's been like a massive obstacle, like for instance, a project that you've never done, a client that is really hard to satisfy, or some sort of personal challenge that you've realized, I'm bad at this thing. I need to get better at this thing. I'll tell you one that's like happening recently is the maturity that other people see in me and that I'm starting to see in me is forming around the fact that I've just given up on trying to be good at things that I'm not good at. I've just said, I don't need to be good at things that I'm not good at. I don't need to keep doing that. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to hire somebody who's really good at that. I'm going to outsource that because you know what? That's going to give me back time and it's going to give me back joy. And time is the most precious commodity we have. You can always make more money, but you can't make more time. And so the smartest thing that I've done lately, the biggest victory I've done is hire people. You're better at this than me. I hire you. You're better at this than me. Join my team. And so I've hired 3 people for my business in the last like 8 months. It's been the best decision of my life because now I have somebody who is my personal assistant and administrator that handles scheduling and blocking out of time and client stuff. Amazing. Game-changing thing for me. I've hired tax strategists and consultants. Amazing. Game-changing to help me move from an LLC to an S-corp in my business. I've hired video editors and social media marketers. I'm like, you do that better than me. You do that better. I hate editing video. I have a YouTube channel and I had to learn how to edit video to get the momentum up and running in my channel. But after like year 4.5, I was like, I think I'm done editing video because I don't love it. It doesn't bring me a lot of joy. And if I can send this to somebody else who eats, sleeps and breathes that, just yeah, have at it. I would love that. So that's a huge win for me. Losses for me in my career have been when I haven't learned a lesson fast enough. I've been let go 2 times in my career. One of them was because the startup just went under, couldn't afford me anymore. And that's okay.
Sure.
The other one is because I didn't learn the lesson of business and that my value that I bring to that company has less to do with pixels and more to do with problem solving. I got let go early on from a job that I had. And I was like a real young, like gung-ho designer, like, no, like my design must be. And I was so hyper-focused on my craft and what things look like that I lost sight of the business goals, right? This isn't helping the business goals. It's actually hurting the business goals. It may look good, but it's not usable. It's not helping the company. And I didn't learn that lesson fast enough. So that was a huge loss when I had to come home that day without a job and go, sorry, sweetheart, I don't have a job anymore because I'm a young, stupid, idiot designer and I'm too prideful to let go of my designs, you know, for the better cause here. So I would say highs and lows. Those are probably big ones for me.
I think every designer goes through a time where they have to personally detach themselves from their designs or what they create. Because everything, when you start off, is incredibly personal. It's kind of just like an extension of yourself. It's your baby. As you go along in your career, it becomes more about like, what does the user test say? What does the value, you know, business value? Would you say after that is kind of when you learned that? Or did it take you a few more years?
It took me a little while. It's a shot to your pride, right? But like,
for sure.
You have to, it's a good thing. If you're not used to it, most people aren't. Okay, I'll just say this. Like most people are not used to constructive criticism, feedback, and having a masochistic kind of like desire to say, tell me what I did wrong here. But if you go to design school, you go to art school, they'll put your beautiful babies, your creations up on a board and let somebody run red marker through it. The first time that ever happened to me, I was like, oh God, I'm a failure. Like, how dare you? Let me pick at yours now. There was all sorts of these little personal insufficiencies and flaws that start to come out. There's a level of that that the general public, quote unquote, doesn't have. But then you have that young, prideful designer that goes, I've been through all that. Now I know nobody should be able to. And you don't realize at the end of the day, you're not the CEO. You're not the owner. You need to do what serves the client, not you. That's another hurdle you have to kind of overcome. And then there becomes when you become a business owner yourself and you have to realize, I actually do know more than most clients that come to me. They say, hey, Jesse, we're a nonprofit, a 501c3. We need a new website. We've never done this before. I go, well, I've done about 50 of these. And they go, oh, we don't like that button there. I go, well, you're stupid. That's how I'm feeling inside, right? There's another hurdle of pride that says, okay, now I need to become a teacher,
yep,
an advocate, and I need to show what the Bible would talk about was patience and love for you and not brush you aside, but go, I need to consider you as really, really valuable and important. I'm going to teach you and tell you why. And at the end of the day, if you don't value my opinion here, then you're not attacking me and my baby. It's just business, right? So there's levels of pride that need to be overcome. And I'm sure there's another level that I'm at age 37 of 14 years in the industry, I haven't learned yet. And if we do another podcast, you and me in 5 years, I might go, I found that new hurdle. It was really painful to overcome. So
yeah,
I'm waiting for it.
No, I think in life, more so than even in design, but I think design really humbles you as you grow. Maybe not even through work, through someone tearing apart your work, but you just looking back at your previous self or your previous designs and you just being like, oh my
brutal, goodness,
right? Like, just someone paid me money to do this.
Level of cringe. Like if I was bold enough, which I'm not, to share with you links of the first websites I ever put online that are still there for some god awful reason, like just the turning of my stomach, right? And just this dropping of my soul would happen. It's atrocious. And 10 years from now, I'll look back on today's work that I do and I'll realize how immature and how off base I was, because we're never ever, I don't believe in nirvana. We're works in progress, will always be progressing, right? And that's something that I just, we tend to, as a culture, we've demonized old age, but at the same time, we've kind of demonized wisdom as well.
Right.
Right. And there's something about people who have been in the game for a long time, who've been just doing great work, just being humble, showing up and getting it done every day versus the real flashy, like trendy, like loud kind of like aspect of it. So instead of lashing on to trends, which tend to die visually and intrinsically, we should probably latch on to foundational things that stand the test of time.
Sure.
And seek out people and places and experiences that have more of that wisdom and sage advice to give to us.
Absolutely. I think that even goes to that point of like, you know, a lot of times we know the conventional wisdom. We know the path that's been gone down and it's tried and true. But there's something in everyone that kind of wants to try the other way. And they have to kind of just go through that and learn that to realize, like, okay, now I see why my dad told me this, or now I see why, you know, that 10-year-old senior designer was like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. I had a boss that I hated, and I won't say names or where or when, but I had a boss that I hated, right? And maybe we've all had that boss. And there was some things validly that, you know, looking back like 10 years later, I'm like, I was valid in some of those things. That person was a bad boss. But I've also realized, oh crud, I was a really bad employee. And there may have been some issues with that person. There was a lot of issues with this person right here, though. Oh, and the cringe of looking back and wishing I could find that person, apologize to them and say, I am so sorry for being the arrogant young punk that I was, that thought I was right and you knew nothing. They had great usability insights, but I literally said to this person, yeah, but you're not the designer. Oh, just stabbed me in the heart. Awful, horrible words that left my mouth. But, you know, I don't believe that. I've heard some people say this term, everybody's a designer. No, but everybody is a problem solver. And the fact that you can't look on developers, project managers, owners, CEOs, and say, you probably have some solutions here, give them to me, right? Because all ships rise with the tide, right? Just because I'm the designer doesn't mean I have to have all the visual solutions. I've literally had project managers go, why the hell is that button there? Why wouldn't you put it over there? I go, why the hell wouldn't? Why wouldn't I put it over there? You know, so like, you just be amazed when you look around, open your ears and shut your mouth a little bit and take in versus try to keep putting things out.
Sure. No, that's a great point. I think also with like building a team or working with clients, being open to anyone's feedback really helps get everyone on board for the best solution. So you could present the best thing in the world, but if someone doesn't feel that they've had adequate feedback or insight into it, right, and don't feel heard, you know, it kind of doesn't matter how good the design is.
Yeah.
That's actually, people are people.
Yeah. That's one of my biggest, I do mentorships and like coaching sessions with like young creatives and entrepreneurs. And one of the things I'm constantly encouraging people to is, yes, you should be honing your craft. Yes, you should be honing your skills. Absolutely. But the skill that everybody, no matter what lane you're in, what industry you're in, that you should be trying to learn is leadership. Because at the end of the day, leading teams, like leading people, like getting feedback, bringing people together in unity is a skill that everybody needs in every industry. Making sure that people feel heard, like they have buy-in, like they're able, there's a place for them at the table to speak. This is actually I've talked to a couple young, frustrated creatives are like, I've been in the game for like 6 years. Why am I not a creative director yet? And I'll say, because you don't know how to be a leader yet. You don't know how to think of anybody but yourself yet, right? You don't know how to sacrifice and surrender your wants and needs for the good of the team to bring morale up. That's what leaders do. And that's what creative directors should be doing. That's what managers should be doing. You're not there yet, right? So I'm really, there's one thing I'm really passionate about is soft skills, not just hard skills in our industry, but the soft skills. Are you good at, you know, they're on every job application ever. We're looking for somebody with good communication skills, good leadership skills, good presence. And people go, yeah, I got those. They go, do you really? Because those soft skills really add up to being the type of person that people want to hire, being the type of contractor that clients want to work with. Like, that's really like a large part of everything we do.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason those are like dismissed or like just so often overlooked is because it's like, how do you effectively measure those in an interview or on paper, right? Like, I could show you how good I could build Figma components and how like good my visual design is, but it's like,
how do you showcase that skills? How do you learn it? And then how do you present it and say, I have these skills without sounding pompous or without it just being like, that's kind of invisible. How do we actually know? My opinion is you only learn them from attempting to do them, and that you can only showcase them by serving other people. So at the end of the day, for me, another thing I'm really passionate about, an area in my industry I'm really passionate about, is the handoff process between design and engineering teams. I'm super passionate about this. I've done 3-hour workshops on the process of it. And people have come to me after and gone, there was like some tactical kind of, here's a process, here's a thing. But a lot of it was very like philosophical, Jesse. You were talking to us about these like ideas. Yeah, of course. Because at the end of the day, right? It says in the New Testament, it says, consider other people more important than yourself. So if I consider an engineer or development team, their time as more important than myself, I'm not being self-deprecating. I'm saying, I'll take the extra time to make your life and your job easier. Do you know how much dev teams love me for that? They're like, Jesse spent an extra 6 hours documenting and creating like a miniature design system and make sure everything was pixel perfect and creating systems and processes and walking us through them and sitting there in meetings during handoff and not just going, why is that button not in the same place I put it? I'm the designer, I say so. Do you know how refreshing that is, right? And on the flip side of things, do you know how great it is as a developer, as a front-end developer, to have designers do that for me? Like, man, this back and forth, this process is so important, but so much of it is soft skills. And you ignore those, and it makes for a tense work environment. It makes for the speed to which you can get products to market slower. If you just slowed down and implemented processes and built soft skills and leaders in your team, products launch so much faster.
Yep. I think one really, really interesting thing to consider in terms of hierarchy, moving up, promotions, things like that, is my theory. I don't have any numbers or statistics to prove this, but I think reciprocity and goodwill and good team organization and communication goes a lot further than being able to like out argue someone or being able to like dominate or have like an awesome one liner that kind of gets you noticed and maybe get in old school days, gets you kind of up the ladder. Sure. But I honestly think from here and going forward, reciprocity does far more for your promotability than pretty much anything else.
What's funny is now, nowadays that I feel like people miss the boat on this, like Twitter launched and everyone was like, I need to be the funniest, quippiest person in like 256 characters all of a sudden. And that became life. I need to be the most polished on social media. That's what really promotes how awesome I am. And we've forgotten all of the lessons that our grandfathers and great grandfathers would teach us, which is work hard, show up on time, consider other people, be humble, right? All of these things like are just these down home sort of like personality traits that if you embody, there's nobody in your workplace or there's no client that you'll ever deal with that will say, God, we hate working with Seth. He's constantly listening to us. He's constantly going out of his way to serve us more. And he's always over-delivering and under-promising. I hate that guy. No,
right.
That's the return client. That's the referral. We loved working with him, even though we couldn't afford him anymore. We recommend him that you work with him later. That's the reciprocity we're talking about.
Absolutely.
From just put your head down and doing the work and being humble and serving other people. That is something that our culture has forgotten. And it's mind-boggling to me that this would be so surprising and counterculture revolutionary for people to hear. It is. It's like, wake up on time, get to work on time, look people in the eye when you talk to them, you know,
right?
Let other people speak. All of those things, those old school ideals, they make a huge impact.
And the awesome thing about that is you don't have to be particularly smart or talented to do those things.
Right.
You can come in and do that with being technically low skill, and you can make a huge impact on a team and not even be close to the smartest or the most talented person on your team.
Right. I mean, what was Mr. Miyagi trying to teach Daniel LaRusso, right? He said, Karate Kid 1, 2, and I'm pretty sure he probably said it again in 3. He said, somebody out there always knows more karate. So it's not about how much karate you know. It's not how many butts you can kick. It's about humbling yourself and knowing that there are other people out there. There are a million dribble shots and Behance profiles that are better than mine. Okay. So it's like, I'm not trying to compete with that. I can't compete with that, right? I could be really down on myself and imposter syndrome could arise and say, I'll never be. Or I can focus on, I've been given certain gifts and skill sets. I'm going to focus on those things. But you know what? I'm okay with letting other people be better dribblers or Behancers or designers than me. I'm just going to be the problem solver that I am. I'm going to be okay with that. There's a level of confidence and humbleness that takes place there, people love to be around that.
Absolutely. That kind of brings me to another topic that's really big in our industry that you kind of just touched on, is imposter syndrome. And it sounds like you kind of either have struggled with that and come out of it, or maybe it was something that you didn't struggle as much with in your career. But do you have any experience with times in your life where you felt like, oh man, if anyone found me out, they would realize that I am not who I say or think I am?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's a little bit different when it comes to imposter syndrome, which is really just a new fancy word for low self-esteem, right? That's all it really is. Like,
yeah,
all of us struggle a little bit, like at times, with low self-esteem. If you don't, you might be a sociopath. I don't know. We're not sure. Right. The jury's still out on that one. But what my insecurity tends to raise its ugly head, not when I do bad, not when things go wrong, but when things go really good. I start to worry and say, somebody's going to find me out, right? So if Adobe comes like calling on my door and says, hey, we'd love you to host some of our daily creative challenges. Like, you want me like to like design in front of people, like for you? Like, right. I'm not good enough for that. Like when, you know, I just did like some workshops and some other stuff with Dribbble. They're like, we'd love for you to host a workshop on product design, mobile app design, stuff like that. We would love for you to do that. I'm like, me? Oh, you don't want me, right? So when things go well in my life, that's when it rears its ugly head. The only way that I've found to combat that is just a daily dose of who gives a crap. Like that's for me really is to step back and say, you know what? If I step too far to the right, somebody will think that I'm not worthy. If I step too far to the left, somebody else will think that I'm not worthy. I'm like, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not going to read all of my YouTube comments and say how wonderful and awesome I am. Not going to do it. I'm not going to let it go to my head. Therefore, I'm also not going to let my own negative like perspective of myself or insecurities, I'm not going to let that rule me either. I'm not going to let anything rule me except for get out of your own head, stop believing the crap and just do the work. And so I show up and I'll do a Dribbble workshop, even though I feel unworthy and some people enjoy it. Some people don't. I'm like, okay. Fine. So it's like, who gives a crap? I'm just going to go for it. And what I'm after in my life is less anxiety, less stress that I put on myself. I was just listening to Will Smith. He put out like a new memoir, like an autobiography. I'm listening to it. It's pretty good. I'm listening to the Audible one. So he's reading it. He's funny. But he talks about a song that he wrote back when he was like a hip hop artist called I Think I Could Beat Mike Tyson. And the whole idea behind the song is, if you train your butt off, let's say you knew you were going to fight Iron Mike Tyson in his prime, you would train every day, eat right, get the best trainers, best workouts, and you show up. And because he's Iron Mike Tyson, he'd probably knock you out. He'd probably knock you like into next week. But at least you knew you did everything. It would be better to show up knowing you were only fighting Mike Tyson and not fighting Mike Tyson and yourself. That's what imposter syndrome is. There's enough people against you. You don't need to be another one against yourself.
Right.
And I was like, that was mind blowing to me. Like, yeah, why would I be against myself? There's enough things in this world that are already against me. I'm not going to add to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thinking about some of your comments and stuff I've seen online of, you know, having a relationship with Christ and being a Christian. And I think for me, you know, sharing in that relationship with Christ, knowing that you're worth is based on what God says about you versus what other people say about you is ultimately that foundational game changing thing. Cause I don't have to seek approval from people or things or achievement, but I know that, you know, God who created me loves me and cares for me. And beyond anything else, that can really change your thought process and your perspective as a designer or anyone.
As a person, it's a total perspective shift. I agree. Like as a Christian, as a believer, somebody who loves Jesus, right? You might not agree. Somebody listening might not agree with that and go like, oh, here's the whole church thing. And it's like, I don't find my identity in church. I don't find it in religion. I don't find it in my wife. I don't find it in my kids or my career. It's found in the person and the work of Jesus and him alone. And the cool thing about that is, and maybe you don't agree with it, but it's totally abstracted. And everything else can be taken from me or robbed from me. Everything in my life can shift, has shifted, will change, probably will change more. All of that can, but that thing is unchanging. And so there's something that is abstracted, unchanging, and that my identity is defined by him, right? And if that's the case, then no matter where the road leads me, I always kind of have a North Star then, don't I?
Yep.
And it's like wayfinder. I spent like 14 years living in Hawaii. The Polynesian people were wayfinders. They looked at the stars. If maybe you haven't lived in Hawaii, maybe you've seen Moana, right? They looked at the stars and they were able to figure out where they've come from and where they're going because they were constants, right? And for me, like that's God. For me, that's Jesus. Like it's a constant that doesn't matter how the waves shift and shape and how the winds blow, there's constant and I can depend on that. So I would agree with you 100%. There has been tons of change in my life. And like I said, there is going to be probably way more. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be doing the same things I'm doing now in 10 years. I don't know if the industry is going to completely change and make my job obsolete. I have no idea what technology holds. No idea. But I just have to have confidence in knowing that he holds the future. So I'm going to go, absolutely. It's going to depend on you. That's it.
And the cool thing is God was the original designer. So we're kind of, you know, being able to follow it in a very, very, very minuscule way.
Tiny little way. Yeah, absolutely.
Creating designs. And that's a cool inspiration to think about for sure. One other thing I wanted to get into is your content creation. So obviously you've got a nice following of a community online that loves your stuff, loves what you put out, loves what you teach. How did you start creating content?
Yeah, I had stepped into this position. It was coming on like 5 years ago now. I was working at a startup and I was like, you know, now is the time where, again, to battle my imposter syndrome, I was like, I don't feel worthy of this job as like a lead, like UI designer at the startup. And to battle it, I'm like, I feel like other people probably feel like this as well. It's probably just my time to like give back. Like that was a way I was going to battle it. And growing into the industry, reading design blogs, like Photoshop and Illustrator blogs at the time was like the thing for me. And I was like, well, I hate blogging, but I can talk. So I'm just going to talk about the things that I know. And I just decided I'm going to do this thing. So I told my wife, I was like, hey, I think I want to do this. I don't know what it's going to look like. And we decided together, that's probably a commitment of my time. And she agreed, I'll be your partner in this. Like I will take care of the kids and kind of clear some space for you to do this. And we'll see what comes of it. And you know, it was that. And also, it was also a personal challenge, back to the personal challenge thing. I struggle with consistency. And so I needed to put something in my life into effect that would challenge that lack of consistency. So when you create a YouTube channel, it's like, I need to be like recording and like editing and uploading something every week. And so it became this challenge of consistency. So I just started kind of talking about what I knew. And I think, you know, a lot of people come to me and they're like, I want to start making content in some way. I'm like, okay, great. Just talk about what you know, talk about what you love, talk about what you're most passionate about and talk about it in the easiest possible way. So one of the things I got real hung up on was I need a better camera or I need this. And I think I probably like recorded 3 or 4 videos that I actually edited and everything and then just fully deleted because I kept saying to myself, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. Until finally somebody grabbed me and went, when will it ever be good enough? It's like, oh yeah, okay. And so I just uploaded one. And if you go back and watch my first video, oh, the cringe. I didn't know how to look at the camera. I didn't know how to talk to people. It was like not me. It was so weird. But I just kept going. I heard somebody say, you need to make like 20 or 30 really bad videos. I was like, okay, I could do that. That's easy because I'm doing that naturally. So I just kept making stuff, right? And then somewhere along the lines, somebody said, hey, that was really helpful. I appreciate that. I was like, okay, cool. And I just kept going. And again, part of that consistency challenge was let's raise the bar. Let's go from one video a week to 2. Let's go from 2 to 3. Let's try to incorporate other things. Let's mix up the content. So it started, I think a lot of people have this idea, like you started out trying to be like a content creator or like some sort of social media influencer. I'm like, no, I just started out trying to help people and challenge myself. And it's turned into what it's turned into now.
Yeah. So you sound like a true Enneagram 7 with just kind of trying to go to what is most fun at the time, right?
Yeah.
The next adventure, but you know, buckling down and having that discipline. Did you ever think like when you started creating content, was there a time where you're like, I want to do this and I want to reach a certain level of like success or traction? Or was it literally just like, I want to see if I can do this for a while?
Yeah, I said to myself, I'm going to do this. So first it was a time marker. My wife and I said, we'll do it for 1 year and we'll see what happens. And in 1 year, I got to 1,000 subscribers. I mean, it was slow. It was very slow going. And then I said, okay, like that was cool. Like now I'm going to challenge myself even more. Year two, I want to challenge myself to go from 1 to 10,000 subscribers. And then I did that. And I was like, okay. So then I lost track of, you know, I don't know, what's a reasonable kind of mile marker for me to hit next? And I employed a common tactic that I used to, because I was a swimmer in high school and college as well, which was when you're swimming, a lot of times you can't see the clock. You don't know how fast you're swimming. All you can see is the person in the lane next to you. So a lot of times it's just about beating the person in a adjacent lane. So I just started finding people online, making YouTube content that was somewhat similar to me. And I would say to myself, I'm going to beat that person. I'm going to pass that person. It's not like I want ill of that person.
Sure.
I was just using them as a mile marker. And so I set up a list for myself of like 8 or 9 like people. And I said, that's a person that I, you know, respect, a person that inspired me to start my own channel. I'm going to strive to pass that person. And then I just kept passing them one by one. I would just keep passing them. And to pass them, you have to ask yourself, what are they doing? Therefore, what do I need to do? Oh, they're making this type of content. They're releasing this much. They're editing this way. They're engaging online. I need to do those things. A lot of people don't know what to do, what direction to take. But if you latch onto a mile marker, whether you're, you know, if you go out for a hike and you see a mountain, right? It's a lot easier to figure out where you want to go if you pick a point of interest and say, I need to get at least there. As you get lost in the weeds and the, you know, whatever, you can still look up and see that mile marker, right? So that was what I did. I just started picking people and going,
that's cool.
Get you. I'm going to catch up to you. And then every time I would, I go, oh my gosh, I passed that person. And then I would feel bad. I feel like a dirtbag for thinking that way. But I'm like, I don't wish ill will towards anybody. I just need a challenge for me to progress.
Sure. And then you DM them and you're like, hey, bro, I passed you or something like that, right?
I would never do that. I would never do that. I mean, so many of these people are the inspiration for me to to start my own channel. So a lot of them I've passed, a few more on that original list of like 8 or 9, I still have. And they're like,
sure,
I'm getting really close to them. So it's just, for me, I need that. And I just hit 200,000 subscribers. And so I set like a really big audacious goal for myself. I said, hey, in the next like 4 years, like I'm going to hit 1 million subscribers. That's my goal. In 4 years, I'm going to hit 1 million subscribers. And I don't know what that's going to look like, but now I need to start putting myself, quote unquote, you know, in the proverbial room of people who have 1 million subscribers. What are they doing?
Right.
What does their channel look like? How often are they posting and what are they doing? I need to be looking at them.
Right. That's awesome. Was there a point in time in this journey where you launched a video and it either went viral or got a lot of traction where you kind of looked around and you're like, okay, I can really do this and I can make a thing out of this?
Yeah. Well, I think one of them for me, I started to get discouraged, you know, in that battle of consistency, because a lot of my videos that would get any sort of traction revolved around tools, right? And tools are ever changing. And it's just like, it became really tedious for me. I was like, I don't want to be the tool guy. I don't want to be the, like, here's the new release for that. Like, ugh, that's not my heart. My heart is problem solving and people and soft. I have so much more to me, at least I think, you know, than just the latest design tool. And I made a video in this office with my wife one day where we just commented and laughed about negative YouTube comments that people have left me. And they ranged from everything from, why do you talk out of the side of your mouth? And, you know, you put too much like pomade in your hair and, you know, like all these things, just the most ridiculous things. Like, and we just had a blast and we're like laughing and stuff. And then people commented about like what a great couple they thought we were and how nice it was to see some positivity based off of negativity. And for me, then it clicked. And I said to myself, you know, people are okay with who I am as I am. And so I don't need to be the tool guy. I can be me. And so maybe it's to my own detriment. I don't know. I've left behind the strategy of every thumbnail must match and you're not staying in this lane. I'm like, you know what? Like today I'm interested in this. I tend to be interested in a similar type things. It's all still about creativity, design, you know, UI design, so on and so forth. But I'm not going to limit myself to that. If I want to talk about a soft skill or I want to talk about something that's interesting to me, I'm going to do it because I want to build an audience of people where I inspire them to be themselves, not to fit some sort of mold. And so if what I need to do to accomplish that mission is be free to fail, I'm going to be free to fail then.
Totally. That's really cool. I think, you know, just being able to kind of more so even do it for yourself than necessarily do it for a particular person or audience probably helps you do it a lot longer term. And, you know, if you're doing it for yourself and for your family, and that's kind of your measure of success versus like what so-and-so says about my hair or whatever, you know, because I have posted a few videos doing little like funny things on a much smaller scale. And even still, like having like 100 people view it, or, you know, even having like 1,000 people view it, and everyone's like, oh, this is really funny, this is awesome. But the one person that says something bad, and you're like, that's all you think about like the rest of the day is like that one comment. You're like, man, that really bothers me.
Yeah. I just think, like, in the words of the great theologian Eminem, like, there ain't no such thing as a halfway crook, right? Like, so you're either going to be all the way you, or you're going to be halfway you, or you're not going to be you at all. That sucks. Like, it sucks to be not you. It actually sucks even more, in my opinion, to be halfway you. You're compromising. So instead, I'm going to be all the way me. I'm just going to be me all the time. Like, the way you and me are talking right now is the same way you and me would talk. You hung out at my house and had a beer is the same way I'm going to talk when I'm recording a YouTube video. And I've decided I'm not changing for anybody. I'm going to be who God made me to be, who I am. This is who I am.
Right.
You either like it or don't like it. There are plenty of other channels that are introverted people teaching you creativity or more experience. Like, you know, if you want to learn how to make a $25,000, $30,000 logo, Chris Doe in the future, oh man, you should go check them out. They're great. You know, if you want to see like a really like talented and strong female creative, go watch Charlie Marie's channel, man. She's kicking butt. Like, there's just so many other options out there. I don't need to fit anybody else's mold but my own.
Absolutely. Very cool. So kind of wrapping things up, looking back over like the start of your career, or even giving advice to someone who might be starting out in their career in UI, UX, product design, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would say it's like my fourth grade basketball teacher told me, the foundations will always take you further than the fancy things, right? So design felt like fundamentals, like design basics, like, and even just the basics of life, like just do the work, just put your head down, just grind, learn the craft, grow as a person, challenge yourself, basic stuff, basic stuff, basic stuff. If you get back to those basics as creative, as a person, you know, as an employee, whatever it is, you will go much further in the long run than somebody who says, I learned how to make, you know, I'm exploring brutalism right now. It's great. I made a whole brutalism website. I go, awesome. But do you know anything about basic typography, or do you know how to put things on a stinking grid? Like, it's some of those basic things, as boring as they sound, will take you further in the long run than virality is a myth, right? Any overnight success that you see, whether it's a band or, you know, online persona, like that person has been creating in the background for years. That band was playing in bars and clubs for years before you found out about them.
Right.
Don't believe in hype. Hype is not real. What's real is you putting in the time and dedicating yourself to something,
right?
And it's staying the course. The formula that has worked for me, and I believe could work for anybody, is consistency over time equals success. I was reading Atomic Habits by James Clear, which is a fantastic book. I think every person should read it. And one of the things he talks about, I forget the exact term, but it's basically, it's the point where most people give up, right? It's like we go to the gym, we work out for 6 weeks, we go, I don't see any results. This isn't working. And you stop going to the gym. But had you stayed for 3 or 4 more weeks, you'd start seeing results. And even on top of that, if you'd stop trying to see the results yourself and ask somebody else to ask them if they see results. Okay, now we can see results. But most people give up before that point of success and consistency starts taking over. So don't give up. I think we're all just want it to be overnight.
Yeah.
We want it to happen so quickly. And I'm saying, put in your 10,000 hours of mastery.
Right.
I'm saying, apply before you think you're ready. I'm saying, learn by failing. I'm saying, get rejected. It's beneficial to get rejected. It's like getting tapped out in jiu-jitsu. You probably should get rejected from a job 5 or 6 times before you get a job you really love. I'd be very suspicious of somebody that says, life's always been easy for me. I applied to my very first job. I became a senior designer immediately. I'm like, what the heck? What sort of fantasy land or dark magic are you walking in? Because it's probably not realistic, my friend. failure is the pathway forward, because that's the pathway of progression.
Right, right. Whenever people come to me and they're like, oh, tell me about UX, or like, how'd you get started? Or like, how I really want to do that. And my advice has always been like, okay, go watch these few videos, try to recreate an app or do this little course and, you know, see what you think about it. And I think for someone to kind of make either a career switch or get into UI UX, you kind of have to get lost in it and love it. I think that's probably true for most things, but it's like,
I think it is true for most things. I think, like, again, you want to start a YouTube channel, go make 40 bad videos. You want to start a podcast, record 10 or 15 episodes, like first, to make sure you have the wherewithal to stick to the consistency and stick with the plan. Because maybe after 5 episodes, your interest in it fizzles out. It wasn't for you. Now you don't have to be the person who put up 5 episodes of podcasts and went, never mind. So like, make 40 bad videos, make 40 bad websites, like do 40 X, like Adobe Daily Creative Challenges, and submit them and ask for feedback, ask for people to give you critique. And you're going to go, but then they'll tell me I did bad. Good, right? You have to just put it out there before you think you're ready, and just kind of stick with it. Cause yeah. there is such a thing as the Mariah Careys in the world who are just popped out of the womb, probably singing in orca tones, right? They're just this phenomenal kind of like phenomenal people, right? There's the Serena and Venus Williams of the world. Okay. But for the rest of us, you got to get out there and practice. You got to get out there and grind and work at it. And it'll start to like click. You'll start creating grooves like water, like over rocks. After a certain amount of time, you're going to smooth the path out. It's going to work for you.
Absolutely. I think that's a great way to end this episode. Jesse, thank you so much for all your wisdom and insight and everything that you've given to us today. Thank you so much. And we had a great time. I had a great time. And I hope that we can do this again someday.
I do too. Thanks, Seth, for having me. If anybody wants to kind of check me out online, just go to jessieshowalter.com and find my links to YouTube. And I got some courses and stuff I'm building and dropping in 2022. So love to have you guys on board for those things. But it was great to be here.
Awesome. Absolutely. We will link all of those up in the show notes. And hopefully give you some new eyeballs on some of your stuff.
Awesome. Thanks, Al.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us today on the Product Design Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, be sure and go follow our guest. Let them know they did a great job and you learned a lot. More to come in the following weeks as we bring on new guests. Please hit that subscribe button so that you will get these podcasts and learn a ton about the product design community. Excited to see you next time. Thanks.